Well, here we are on the second Sunday of Advent, and our scripture passage from Luke for this morning talks about terrain on our journey toward the manger. You may have heard some clues to the fact that it talks about terrain. You may have heard about mountains and valleys, literal geological, geographical references to terrain. What is the landscape like as we move toward the manger? But what you may not have noticed is the political and economic terrain that was also discussed in the passage. And the reason you may not have noticed is you might be like me. Have you ever noticed that with some biblical texts, when they start talking about names of people you never heard of and names of places you're not sure about, you kind of zone out? That's what I was doing this morning. I really apologize, Marilyn, but as you were reading, I was thinking, oh boy, when so-and-so was this and so was that. So just to make sure that I've got it, and maybe that you've got it, I want to read it one more time, because it's about terrain. So John is speaking to the crowds. And when is he speaking? Here's how Luke sets the scene. He establishes and talks about the terrain. In the 15th year of the reign of Emperor Tiberius, when Pontius Pilate was governor of Judea, and Herod was ruler of Galilee, and his brother Philip was ruler of the region of Iturea, and Trachonitis and Lysanias, ruler of the Abilene, during the high priesthood of Annas and Caiaphas, the word of God came to John, the son of Zechariah, in the wilderness. All together now, repeat it, please. In the 15th... That's not the funny part of this sermon. Yes, of course, it's one funny part. There's no way. I'm sure I didn't even pronounce half of those words correctly. Why in the world is Luke trying to tell us all of those things? Because he's setting a scene. And in order to understand what John the Baptist is saying, we need to understand the scene that Luke is setting as he talks about terrain. So let's start at the mountains. In the 15th year of the reign of Emperor Tiberius, here's what it seems like Luke is saying. This is a story, people of God, about a time during which the Roman Empire is large and in charge. You need to know what's happening at the mountaintops of our society as I tell you the story, says Luke. It's also happening when Rome doesn't only rule Rome, but Rome rules everywhere that I'm going to talk about. There's this guy in Judea, his name is Pontius Pilate, and he's in charge and he represents Rome. So as you listen to the story, you need to know who lives in the mountaintops and who's in the valleys. By the way, there's this guy named Herod. And if you are reading this in the first century, you might know that if you were Jewish, you were a little bit suspicious of and a lot angry about Herod. You see, Herod wasn't really a good Judean or Galilean family member. He'd married his way into the families. He was an Idumean. He was from the south. He wasn't a part of the polity, and he was very much a Roman sycophant. I'll ease that up a little bit. He was a suck-up to Rome. Folks didn't like Herod, but he was very powerful, and he taxed the pants off of people. So he's another mountaintop figure up there with Tiberius at the very top, Pontius Pilate around here, and maybe just a little below, but still very menacing, was Herod. And his brother Philip, if we hadn't had enough of Herod's family, his brother Philip rules several other regions that need not be pronounced again today. And it was during the high priesthood of Annas and Caiaphas, while other people are ruling at the temple. These are the structures that are in place when John, the son of Zechariah, goes down to the little flowing muddy Jordan River to say something about the terrain. If we're going to navigate Advent, we need to talk about terrain. Our Advent story is about who's in power and who's not, and what can change and what cannot. And it's not only about navigating terrain. If that were true, then we would sing with Handel's Messiah, every valley, right? We would say that won't be made exalted, but every valley will be easy to walk through, right? And we wouldn't change what the mountains are, we'll just change how we walk on the mountains. But what we say is that the valleys will be exalted, the mountains will be made low or humbled. That's what John preaches, a change of terrain. Now, what's that mean for us today? What in the world does it have to do with our hope as Christian people as we look forward to what it means to welcome God as a child? We sang just a few moments ago, "When God is a Child," in the Chalice Hymnal. Listen again to the refrain. I'll speak it so as not to offend. When God is a child, there's joy in our song. The last shall be first, and the weak shall be strong, and none shall be afraid. When God is a child, the terrain changes. And we're okay with it, the song seems to say. When God comes and is born as a human child in the world through Jesus of Nazareth, something changes. We find joy in a change of terrain. Imagine that. Joy in a change of terrain. When the last become first. Now, if you're last and the terrain changes and you now get to be first, I can see why you'd be joyful. But what if you're first and the terrain changes? How are you going to feel about that? Well, if you're weak and the terrain changes and you become strong, I can see why you might be filled with joy. But what if you're strong and the terrain changes? How are you going to feel about that? And yet, every year, over and over and over again, we sing the songs about the changing terrain and we read the stories about the changing terrain. We say that we exalt valleys and we humble mountains. We say that the last shall be first and the first shall be last. We say that the weak shall be strong and the strong shall be weak. We like to talk about the changing terrain, but what would it mean to actually live in changing terrain? Many of you might know that I, usually weeks and sometimes months ahead of time, read the passages and work on studying them about which I will preach on Sunday mornings. And you may also know that it's very likely that I might hear something on the radio driving into church that will change what I have to say on Sunday morning. You might also know that almost every week lately, something horrendous happens that changes what I say on Sunday morning. The terrain's changing, isn't it? It's changing quickly and for the worse. Do you know that I've heard the statistic that just this year in 2015, we're up into the 350s for mass shootings here in our United States of America? Do you know that week after week after week we hear another terrifying story of terrorism? Last week, I looked on with shock and fear and sadness and tears, as did so many of you, as we saw what had unfolded in San Bernardino, California. When I came home from work and turned on the news, as I often do, I hadn't heard the story yet. All I saw was police in standoff looking for suspects in San Bernardino. And I kept asking myself, what happened in San Bernardino? What's going on? And so I Googled and looked and saw that indeed one of the largest, most recent mass shootings had occurred. The terrain's changing, and it's changing for the worse. And yet we are people who happily and hopefully and joyously sing during Advent that we're happy when the terrain changes. And so what I want to ask us this morning is, what sort of vision do we hold out for, number one, navigating difficult terrain, and number two, altering the terrain? Do we believe in the story of our faith that through Jesus Christ, God changes the terrain? So number one, how can we navigate? There are a number of ways that we can respond to this hateful terrorist act that happened in San Bernardino. And yes, I know on the news people are always talking about, can you say this was terrorism? Can you say that? Let me tell you this, I was terrified when I turned on the television, so I'm going to say terror. And when the Planned Parenthood clinic was attacked, I was terrified, so I'm going to say terror. And when schools are broken into and children and teachers are killed, I'm terrified, so I'm going to say terror. When Doctors Without Borders clinics are bombed, I'm terrified, so I'm going to say terror. How do we respond? How do we navigate terrains of terror? John the Baptist seemed to think one of the ways that we can navigate terrains of terror is to understand that God sends redemption, salvation through Jesus for all flesh. That's what Luke tells us, that the one who is to come will come to redeem and to save all flesh. So one of the very first keys to our navigation of the terrain of terror in which we find ourselves is to remember that as God's people, we are part of a human family. Not just a Christian family, not just an American family, but a human family. Now, as a member of a human family, I want to do two very important things, and they're connected. And so I want to say them as clearly as I possibly can. As a member of the human family, I want to condemn outright and out of hand any acts of violence like the kind that we saw in San Bernardino. It's wrong. It's a manifestation of evil in our midst. It seems like it's nurtured and nourished by hate. It arises out of fear. We ought not, cannot, and should not live in a world where people are killing each other with sprays of bullets and large assault weapons in the midst of our holiday parties and our schools and our streets and our government offices. At the same time that I condemn that out of hand, without reservation, I also want to say our response must be a response of hope that we can change the terrain so that the people who resort to those awful, evil acts of hatred can somehow feel connected to our human communities, and so that the families that are grieving at the senseless loss of life from this evil deed can somehow feel reconnected to our human communities. The terrain has got to change. I heard another story this week about difficult terrain and a response, a navigation that was a terrain-changing response. Maybe some of you heard this as well. For the first time, Israel honored an American soldier with one of its Light to the Nations awards, very high humanitarian award. Israel gave it to Master Sergeant Roddy Edmonds for his act of bravery and love during World War II. If you hadn't heard the story this last week, maybe I'll share it with you now. Roddy Edmonds was the highest ranking soldier at a prisoner of war camp in Nazi Germany during, or at least under the Nazis, during World War II. And the Nazis, as they were wont to do, wanted to separate out the Jews from the non-Jews. And so they gave the order. We want all of you prisoners of wars to send out all of the Jews. And Roddy said to all of the other soldiers there who were under his command, because he was the highest ranking NCO, we're not going to play their game. were all falling out for this. And all of them went out. The Nazis couldn't believe it. Certainly, you can't all be Jews. They found Master Sergeant Edmonds. They put a gun to his head. And his response to them was, "We're all Jews here." In the midst of difficult terrain, he refused to take the easy way out. He refused to scapegoat others. He refused to play by the rules of the existing game. The Nazi holding the gun wasn't sure what to do. What did he do? He chose not to fire. And that day, the Jews and non-Jews were not separated out from one another. One man stood up, everyone else stood with him. They changed the way they navigated difficult, terrible, terrifying terrain. And then, because of that act of navigation, the terrain began to change. That's what we are called to by John the Baptist in Luke's Gospel. In the midst of terrifying terrain, we're called to be people who navigate it differently. And by navigating it differently through acts of love and discipleship, the terrain little by little will change. If we're willing to say, "Oh, we're afraid, we're terrified, but we're hopeful, and we're not going to resort to name-calling. We're not going to resort to scapegoating. We're not going to resort to separating folks out, because we're going to stand out together when we all fall out, and we're going to say, we're all humans here. We're all humans here." Now listen carefully. The guns are literally to our heads. Every time you turn on the news, you hear, it doesn't matter anymore where you are. It doesn't matter if you're at a government county holiday party. It doesn't matter if you're at work, at a clinic. It doesn't matter if you're at a school. It doesn't matter if you're a kindergartner. It doesn't matter if you're in a church. It doesn't matter if you're at a Bible study. The guns are to our heads. Will we fall out and say, "We're all humans here"? Will we believe what John the Baptist had to say strongly and clearly enough that we'll have faith to move forward and change? It's easy to want to change the terrain in the way the Nazis wanted to do it. You know what the Nazis' response was, right? It's those damn Jews. They're responsible for everything. They taught their children. They rewrote the history books so that the children would hear, the reason we have poverty, the reason we lost World War I, the reason things are so terrible in Germany, it's those damn Jews. We could do that now today. The reason everything's so terrible, the reason we're terrified, the reason the world is falling apart is it's those damn Jews. Insert whatever you're excited and angry about right now. Or with Sergeant Edmonds, we can fall out and say we're all humans here. I watched on Showtime last week the Spy Masters. Did anybody see the Spy Masters about the CIA directors? Actual CIA directors, I think 12 of the past CIA directors interviewed separately. Very interesting to watch. They didn't agree on almost anything. You'd interview one, well, I wouldn't say torture. You interview another, well, that probably was torture. You interview another one, well, we've got to protect this. You interview another one, no, I didn't see him in the office. The other one said, well, he was in the office, and back and forth, and they all had stories, and of course, they were all remembering things from their own perspective, and they served at different times. But the one thing, the only thing that all of them agreed on was, with regard to terror, we can't kill our way out of this situation. All of them said that. And I really don't think they were saying it as an article of faith. They weren't with us singing "When God is a Child." They weren't saying, well, we're just hopeful Christian types, and that's why we can't kill our way out of it. They were saying it as trained CIA directors who understand what works and what doesn't. They were saying it pragmatically. This ain't gonna work. In order to navigate this terrain, we've got to change our procedures so that the terrain can change. So where does that leave us, hopeful Christians, on our walk toward Bethlehem this year, at a time when powerful, powerful forces seem bent on dividing us? If we trust in that word of hope that we heard so gleefully said three times from that microphone, hope, 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 then we will all fall in together, proclaim that we're all human here, and we will know that as the terrain changes, we will change with it. If I've been so strong that my strength has been making another weak, I'm going to understand that I'm going to have to give up some strength and gain some weakness. If I've been first too often so that others have been last all the time, I'm going to have to step to the back of the line so other people can have an opportunity. Because that's what we celebrate at Christmas. Think about it. When you picture God, what do you picture? When I was a kid, I always pictured an old white guy with a long white beard and a robe and sandals on a really fancy gold throne up in the sky. I never pictured God as a crying baby in a barn. Never. But that's what Christmas is about. Christmas is about, if God can change the terrain and God can navigate it differently, if God can become a child, then by God, disciples of Christ, so can we. It's not easy, but I think it is relatively simple. What I'm saying here is it's difficult, but it's not complicated. As we move forward in this terrifying terrain, let's begin to fall in together, to remember that we're all humans here, we're all humans out there, and to stand up for love, to speak out against terror, and to work for consolidation, consideration, and community. That's what we practice at this table each and every week. There's bread, and there's a body, and they are broken. The cross is a place of brokenness, but Easter is a place of reconciliation, redemption, and renewal. The bread is broken, but it is shared, and it creates a unity through us. As we move forward from this place, from this low valley, as we hear John's vision, let us participate in true change, metanoia, mind-changing difference, so that mountains might be transformed, valleys might be elevated, and that we might proclaim, remember, and believe we're all humans here. And for that, in the name of Jesus Christ, thanks be to God.